Do you want to wrap up your discussions? I'm not going to ask you to share what you discussed, because I know that was a difficult conversation to have, but I'll share this story. So I went to uni in Newcastle, so I've got quite a few friends up there. One of them posted a story on Instagram recently about that the girl in Ireland, who was the teacher that was murdered, I think she was going for a run, something like that. And so I just messaged her, like, oh, like, I hope you're doing okay, like, how are you doing? And she's like, yeah, I feel a bit numb, but yeah, I'm doing okay. But then she told me, so she's a student worker at her church, and she told me, oh, by the way, we have been asked to do, her and her husband, we've been asked to do this seminar on racism at a student weekend away, and we're so like out of our depths on this. Like, have you got any like articles, any books, any like videos you can send? And so I sent the stuff over, but then I was like, okay, like, sis, you know I love you, and I'm asking you these questions because I love you. But number one, has your church actually done about racism and racial injustice within the church, never mind outside of it? And second of all, do you have to be the one to deliver this seminar? Is there not someone who is trained in those kinds of things? And have you kind of thought about how the students who are people of color might feel about you leading this seminar? And I say that to share, like, this is why it's important for us not just to kind of talk about justice. Like, we actually have to think these things through. And it can be really overwhelming because, like, even when I was preparing this talk, I was like, if I was going to do a talk on racial justice or like climate justice or gender equality, that would be a big topic in and of itself. But this idea of just justice generally, it's like, come on, man, it's a lot and it's tiring. But we can't just pay lip service to justice. We can't just have a talk on a Sunday or a discussion about, like, we actually have to like make sure we're doing the hard work of living this out. So that's why I wanted you guys to have that conversation before we went any further. And so, before that conversation, where we got up to was that young people are being taught about justice by secular movements, secular ideologies. And so the church needs to step up to equip young people, to give them a Jesus-centered, spirit-empowered passion for justice. And so we're going to think about how we do that, how we go about doing that. But just a disclaimer, or a couple of disclaimers before we go into that. I don't consider myself an expert on justice. I feel like it's a journey I'm on, just like the rest of you guys. And second of all, I've only been a youth pastor for 2.5 years, and most of that has been through a pandemic. And so if you were expecting me to give you like a 5-step plan to give your youth ministry the perfect way to engage people in justice, you may as well just leave now. Don't leave, please. But what I am going to do is just going to talk through some of the things that we're doing in our youth ministry and what we plan to do over the next few years. And some of the philosophy behind that. And then hopefully there's some things that you can kind of take and adapt for your own context, for your own ministry. And then after I finish talking, there'll be space for, I guess, kind of like Q&A if you want me to elaborate on anything that we're doing. But also some space for collaboration as well. Maybe there's stuff you're doing in your youth ministry that, that you can share with us. Or maybe something I've said sparks an idea and we can kind of hash that out together. Does that sound cool? All right, so our kind of strategy, I guess, for empowering young people to fight justice, we kind of attack it from 3 angles, but they all overlap. And we kind of think about it, the 3 angles are through teaching young people about justice, praying with young people about justice and sending young people out to do justice. So let's start with teaching. So we think about our teaching as taking, young people need to know that justice matters to God. They need to know that. In fact, justice is a central theme of the gospel, and the message of Jesus. And there's a danger that if we don't teach about justice, young people will at best think it's irrelevant to their faith, and at worst assume that God is unjust. So how do we teach about justice? Well, we think about our teaching as taking place in two spaces. We have our planned spaces for teaching. So that's like the sessions that we plan through the week, where someone's standing up from the front to teach, or we're in groups having discussions about justice. And the way we do that is we do one series every year about justice that lasts about 4 to 5 weeks. And we're teaching about that. Actually, in 2020, we did two series because we had the planned series, and then Black Lives Matter happened as well. And I have my youth group is majority black, and so I guess pastorally we had to teach into that as well. So those are our planned spaces. But then we also have spontaneous teaching. And so that's just like when it comes up on the news or in conversation, then we don't just like bypass it, like we have the conversation there and then. That happens mostly on a Friday night for us, because the way our Friday nights are set up is we have like an hour of just like chill time, like the classic youth club stuff, PlayStation, sofas, like whatever, and then we do teaching after that. So usually in that first hour is where the spontaneous conversations happen. So an example of that, just 2 weeks ago, I was sat with one of my female youth leaders and just a group of young girls, and we were just having a conversation, and then one of them asked me, Pastor, what do you do when you're at a party? And I was like, I haven't been to the kind of party you're talking about since I was at uni, so but this is what I used to do when I was at a party. This is how I would attempt to be faithful to Jesus in those moments. And then the conversation progressed, and they started to talk about how they behaved at parties, and they started to talk about how they didn't feel safe to go to the toilet by themselves at a party. They had to like go in groups together, and then they started talking about how like they get how men look at them when they're on the bus, and how they feel like they're not safe to walk in the dark by themselves. And I'm just having this conversation with them, and we're listening to them, asking them questions about how they feel about that. And the teaching session is supposed to start at 8, and I was just talking to these guys, and it got to and I looked at my watch, and it was 8:20. I was like, well, the teaching session is out the window now. So instead, what we did was we just all the guys who weren't part of the conversation, we just got them in. Got round in a circle and just continued the conversation, and made it really clear that, okay, this is a safe space. We're family, we're community. Like, just share your opinion. Like, even if it's controversial, just share your opinion. Be respectful of people's opinion. And then once you've shared your opinion, we're going to go to the Bible. I'm going to see what the Bible has to say about this. And honestly, it's those spontaneous conversations that I prefer them to the teaching stuff, because it's just more organic, it's actually what they're thinking, instead of Jesus is the answer to every question. And what was really interesting, so we started off, when we got all the guys together, we started off the conversation just by saying, what do you think about this issue? What do you think about gender equality? Guy, one of our older guys, I think he's in year 12, and he was like, he put his hand up and he was like, feminism. I was like, okay, great. Can you expand on that a little bit? He was just like, okay. But then the next girl who answered, one of our older girls, she was like, awkward. And I was like, what do you mean? She was like, well, we're having this conversation and everyone's silent because we don't talk about it enough. And I was like, oh man, like I thought we were doing so well, like we got this conversation going, but it's true, we don't talk about these things enough. And so in the debrief with my team after, we were just like, yeah, we need to try and make even beyond the teaching series every year, we need to try and make more space for these conversations to happen. So our teaching takes place in planned spaces and spontaneous spaces as well. But let me talk a little bit about the content of our teaching. We try to avoid using general Bible verses about justice and then tell young people, here's a Bible verse about justice. Oh, look, see, God cares about justice. We try to avoid doing that for several reasons, because just knowing that God cares about justice won't necessarily equip young people to fight justice in Jesus' way. Also, presenting biblical justice as a set of facts or sporadic Bible verses won't necessarily help them love Jesus more. And the culture around us is telling them a story about justice that is more compelling than a set of facts. All the neuroscientists and all the kind of ministry guys who love talking about spiritual formation will tell you that the stories we believe shape us, they shape who we become. And I'll give you an example. So when I was a kid, like most kids, I watched CBeebies, and there's this one show, I can't remember anything that happened in it apart from this like one scene that's still stuck in my head. The show is called, I think it's called Spider in the Bath. Does anyone know? Yeah, you know? Oh, cool. Nice. Spider in the Bath. And the only thing I can remember from it, I don't know, you know how like sometimes you like add to your memories? I don't know if this is one of those times. But what I remember is that there's a spider in the bath, hence the name, and then the tap gets turned on and the spider gets like washed down the drain. You've seen it? Yeah. Come on. So the spider gets... Come on. Yeah. Nostalgia. So the spider gets washed down the drain, and somehow I put together this narrative in my head that if anything touches the drain, it gets sucked down. And so I was terrified that if my foot even touched the drain, that I was gonna get sucked down to some oblivion. I was terrified to do anything, to go, like, literally, so let's say, like, I was in the bath, if the drain is here, I'm, like, over here, and I'm just like, ugh. But obviously, as a 25-year-old man, I know that if I step on the drain, I know as a fact I'm not going to go down the drain, but I will still avoid the drain at all costs. And it's because... the story that has been formed in my head is more powerful than the fact. And so we, when we're teaching young people, we don't just want to give them random Bible verses that tell them God cares about justice. What we want to do is tell a better story that helps young people to love Jesus and equips them to fight injustice. And I'll tell you a secret, we have one. It's the gospel. The gospel is a story that tells us why justice is important. It tells us why it exists. It tells us what the solution is, what we should do about it, and the certain hope for the future. So whenever we teach about justice, we are in some way, whether it's in conversation, whether it's in planned teaching, we are in some way trying to tell young people the story of the gospel beginning in Genesis and ending in Revelation. So let me give you a quick framework that we use when we're thinking about justice. Let's look at the story of the gospel and how it speaks to justice. So you're all sitting comfortably, then I'll begin. Okay, we're ahead on the slides. Oh. There you go. Cool. So I guess this is like chapter one of the story. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. God is the creator of the whole universe, which makes him the rightful ruler and king over all of creation. And as the king of creation, he chooses to make human beings in his image. And that has a whole load of connotations, one of them being that because all human beings are made in the image of God, they are inherently worthy of dignity. It doesn't matter about your age, your race, your gender, your social class, your sexuality, your disability, your religion, or anything else. All human beings are worthy of dignity because they are made in the image of God. And that means whenever a human being is stripped of their dignity, this is a huge offense to God and should be offensive to us. This is the reason why racism, sexism, ableism, homophobia, abortion, pornography, human trafficking, slavery, and every other injustice in the world is wrong. Because it strips human beings of their God-given dignity. This even applies to climate justice as well. Because as God makes human beings in his image, he gives them this task to take care of creation. It's attached to being made in the image of God. And so as if we're destroying the planet, we're not lining up with that task that God has attached to the image of God that he's put in us. But also on top of that, it's some of the poorest communities in the world are being most heavily affected by climate change. And so it's actually the idea that wealthier communities are enjoying luxury and comfort at the expense of poorer communities as if their lives don't matter. So this is why justice is important, because all human beings are made in the image of God. But why does injustice exist? Because God is the creator and king of all creation, and when he finished creating the world, we're told that it was very good. What human beings chose to rebel against God, to reject God as king and ruler over all of creation, and attempted to seize control for ourselves. And that's what the Bible calls sin. It's not so much about the stuff that we do, it is a heart that is in rebellion against God. And sin separates us from God, it damages our relationships with each other, and damages our relationship with creation. And so sin is the root cause of all injustice. Isaiah 59, verses 12 to 14 says, I'm really not good at this clicker thing, man. I give up. It says, for our offenses are many in your sight, and our sins testify against us. Our offenses are ever with us, and we acknowledge our iniquities. Rebellion and treachery against the Lord, turning our backs on our God, inciting revolt and oppression, uttering lies our hearts have conceived. So justice is driven back, and righteousness stands at a distance. And so as human beings turn away from God, rebel against God, reject God, the result is injustice. So misogyny, white supremacy, greed, imbalances of power, these are just symptoms of a deeper problem. And we have to talk about the symptoms. We have to address them. But we cannot deal with these symptoms without dealing with sin. And sin is universal. All of us have sinned. All of us have fallen short of the glory of God, which means that any attempt to dismantle injustice with human ideas and ideologies or human good intentions and goodwill won't work, because these are too easily corrupted by sin. And so in order to have a solution to injustice, we first have to have a solution to sin. And that's where Jesus comes in. But before we talk about Jesus, we will talk about Jesus, that's important. But before we do, it's important for us to ask the question, what is justice? Like, when we're talking about justice, what are we fighting for? Because there are actually several different types of justice. There's meritocratic justice. That's the idea that you get what you deserve. So if on the way to the train station this afternoon I was to rob a bank, meritocratic justice would be for me to go to prison. Or if one of your young people was to write this really great essay for their coursework that was worth like an A, or like they do numbers now, I can't work out the numbers. It was worth an A, but they got a C, that would be unjust according to meritocratic justice because they didn't get what they deserved. So there's that. And then there's distributive justice, this idea of redistributing things that everyone has equal access to resources, distributive justice. And there's also libertarian justice, which is this idea of individual rights. And France tried to ban Muslim women from wearing a hijab. That was an infringement on libertarian justice. But the problem is, when you're, I guess, trying to execute justice, those three types of justice often, clash, thank you, a conflict, either, interchangeable. Those three types of justice, they can't happen at the same time. And so you have to decide what is the priority, which type of justice is our priority. Well, for Jesus, his priority for justice was something called, and is something called, restorative justice. It's this idea that justice is seeking to restore dignity and restore relationships through reparations. To restore dignity and restore relationships through reparations. You see, we see that throughout Jesus' life and in his actions that he goes to restore dignity to those who've been stripped of it by society. He sits and eats with the outcast, the ones who society says don't matter, the marginalized. And then he challenges the privileged, those who are either complicit in building systems of oppression or who are benefiting from systems of oppression. He challenges them. He tells them not just to give to the poor, but to care for them. He says, don't just invite your friends to your banquets. Invite the poor and the lame and the beggars, those who've been stripped of their dignity by society. And not everyone accepts this challenge, but for those that do, take Zacchaeus, for example, a tax collector who took more money from people than he should have. He meets Jesus, is challenged by Jesus, and is transformed. He says, I'm going to give like everything I have to the poor, or everything that I've taken, I'm giving it back. Reparations. So in his teaching, Jesus calls people to restorative justice as well. He, as I said, about challenging the privilege, but also for those who've been hurt to forgive, for those with power to use it to serve others. Restorative justice, restoring dignity and relationship through reparations. But Jesus didn't just teach about justice. He executed the perfect act of restorative justice on the cross. So as we mentioned, sin is universal. And sin doesn't just separate us from God, but meritocratic justice says that we deserve wrath and judgment, which results in death. And instead of leaving us to that fate, Jesus goes to the cross to make reparations on our behalf. So that our dignity is restored because he's rescued us from the dominion of darkness and the power of sin, and that our relationship with God is restored. But he doesn't just do that, he restores, he removes the barriers between people groups as well. Ephesians 2 tells us that he has removed the dividing wall of hostility. In fact, if you read just the whole of Ephesians 2, it's just this beautiful narrative of how Jesus executes perfect restorative justice, both between us and God and between people groups as well. So now, as we put our faith in Jesus, choosing to follow him, he fills us with his spirit and he invites us to join him in his work of restorative justice, to care for the poor, the needy, the oppressed, the marginalized, to call out injustice when we see it, and to restore the dignity of those who've been stripped of it. And as we do that, we are confident that with his return, Jesus is coming to make all things new and to make all things right. All injustice will be dismantled. Everything will be right with the world. So our fight for justice is not a losing fight. It is one that's already won because of Jesus. And so that gives us hope as we fight for justice. All right, so thank you for staying with me on that. That was quite long. But that's kind of like our framework for how we teach justice. And it was a lot, but there's actually so much more we could kind of extrapolate from that. So that's kind of like the skeleton, and then we go from there. We also don't use words like meritocratic justice and distributive justice, because young people don't care about that. That's just for our understanding as we teach it. And we don't always go through the whole story in one session or even one series, but we're just trying to pull out as much as we can. So, for example, the last series that we did on justice, we just looked at what some of the prophets had to say about justice, and then just where relevant, just told this story using the passages from the prophets. And then what's also really helpful is that we're always telling this story, not just when we're talking about justice, but whatever series we're teaching on, we're always asking, how does what we believe about creation impact our view of this, of how this should be? How has the fall corrupted what this is? How does Jesus restore it and invite us to engage with it? And how does our hope for the new creation impact our view of this issue as well? All right, so that's our teaching. Both planned and spontaneous spaces for teaching, telling them the story of the gospel that helps them to love Jesus and equips them to fight injustice. The second part of our strategy, prayer, again, planned and spontaneous. So one of our values at City Gates Youth is prayer is our power. So we're really big on encouraging young people to pray. And so we make space for that in every session that we do. But also, just like when things come up in the news as well, or come up in conversation, we also just pray with young people on those issues as well. Because praying about issues of justice teaches young people, number one, that justice matters to God, and number two, that truth can't happen without him. And so just a few ideas that we've used to help young people to pray for justice. So a few months back now, our young people wanted a worship night, so we put like a worship and prayer night on. And we had like prayer stations, and at one of the stations we just got young people to pray for justice. We got like, you just went on Canva and found like different Canvas Classic. If you're not a graphic designer, I'm not a graphic designer. You can just like search like Black Lives Matter or like just some justice movement, and you'll find some cool graphics. We just put the posters out on the table, and young people just wrote prayers for each issue of injustice. We also use post-it notes a lot for prayer, because especially for young people who struggle to pray out loud, we just get them to write down their prayers and stick them on different things, walls, tables, posters, people, whatever. People. It is what it is. For young people that are confident in prayer, we try not to do the prayer from the front. We try and get young people to do it, to encourage other young people that it's cool to pray. Like, it's not just for me or the leaders. Like, It's for all of us if you have a relationship with Jesus. We also get young people to pray for different organizations as well in the community and kind of like, I guess, nationally, who are working for, if we're praying for a specific area of injustice, then we pray for organizations too. And also just praying through Psalms, because there are actually quite a lot of Psalms that are cries for God to move and bring justice. So yeah, we get young people to pray through Psalms as well. So that's prayer. And then the final part of our strategy is action. So something that we're currently doing, this is something that we plan to do, but I don't know about you guys, but I found Limitless Festival, the last one online, really helpful for our young people, particularly the Go section of it. And one of the things we did was we got young people to just put some packs together for homeless people. But so that it wasn't just like we're putting packs together, but we're actually doing justice, we're restoring dignity. We got them to like write notes for the people that were receiving the packs. And some of them like wrote just really simple stuff like you are worth so much. But I hope that was taken the right way, but like not we're trying to sell you or something, but just really simple stuff. But then some of them like wrote like pages of like just really encouraging things, restoring dignity to people who are often like overlooked, and like people don't even make eye contact with them, but their dignity has been restored. And the young people loved it, and we went to go and drop it off to one of the local organizations that work with young people, and they loved it. They loved being a part of it, and that was just really cool for them. And so off the back of that, what we want to try and do is twice a year, May half term and then October half term, just do some kind of a social action, some kind of actually doing justice, actually restoring people's dignity. So just a few, tips on that. Again, this isn't something that we're currently doing, so these are just like ideas off the top of my head that might work for your context. So get young people involved with what your church is already doing. If your church has a food bank, or maybe you distribute stuff to people in the community, get young people involved in that. Get young people involved in conversations around changes that need to take place in your church. So I was kind of hoping Luke could be here from Luton so he could tell us a bit more about it. But I know Luton Christian Fellowship, the Ealing Church in Luton, after everything happened with George Floyd, they actually did this thing where I guess they kind of listened to and I guess surveyed like their whole church around issues of race and racial diversity. And they involved their young people in that as well, which I thought was so cool. Props to Mike and Becky Luton for doing that. I don't know, maybe if you've got young people who are passionate about justice, ask them about like things like racial diversity in your church or gender diversity or things like that, and involve them in conversations if you can. Like get them in conversations with your lead pastor if he or she is open to having those conversations as well. Get young people involved in conversations around changes that need to take place, and especially because a lot of these young people are the ones who are letting me know about the different issues that are going on. They're much more plugged in than we are, so get them in on the conversation. Partner with local organizations as well. You don't need to reinvent the wheel. For example, for us, social action we're going to do in May. There's a woman in our church who works for like a homeless charity that's literally down the road, and so I just and the same for Limitless Festival as well. I just called her and I was just like, oh, like, is there any way like the young people can help out in some way And then she just told me what would be helpful, and we did that. So feel free to, maybe there's people in your church, or just reach out to local organizations and see what you can do with them. You can get young people involved with systemic change. So there's an organization called Citizens UK, who our church was briefly kind of involved with. But at the time, because I just started out youth ministry, I wasn't in a position to engage with that. But they were really big on getting young people involved with systemic changes. For example, I don't know if it's like this elsewhere, but in London, young people can get the bus for free. It's like a, what is it, Zap card or something, or Zip card? No, is it not like a, it's not got a Zip on it? Yeah, yeah, Zip card. Yeah, yeah. See, you don't know what you're talking about. Anyway. anyway. Yeah, yeah. Okay. All right. So maybe it's an East London thing. But anyway, as I was saying, there's these things called Zip cards, so young people can get the bus for free. And the council were thinking of scrapping it. But that would mean that a lot of young people kind of getting to school and back wouldn't be safe for them. And so with Citizens, they partnered with like youth organizations and schools to put together this campaign for systemic change, like actual things that are going on in the community. Like, you can empower young people to have a voice in those things. Citizens UK is the only one I know of. Maybe there's other organizations out there. But that just a disclaimer that they're not exclusively Christian, so you'll be interacting with other faiths on that. But I feel like that's cool. And then get young people to serve and do social action with the wider church and with their families as well. Get families involved. Get young people serving the community with their parents, with their siblings. Because then that not only helps young people to do justice, but they also get to see that it's not just a youth issue, it's a Christian issue, and the wider church get to see that it's a church issue as well. It's something that Jesus is calling us to do. And just on the action, so if you've got young people that are passionate about justice, they may already be like really active already in their schools, for example. Encourage them to rest. Remind them of the hope that we have in Jesus, that yes, he's called us to do justice, but it's like kind of almost like this, that he's called us to do justice, but he's the one who's going to dismantle it. It's not dependent on our constant striving and effort. And so if you've got young people who are really going for it, encourage them in that, but also encourage them to take time to rest and to breathe. Maybe take time off social media if they're really active on and vocal on that as well, and those kinds of things. So that is, that's what we're doing and what we hope to do. Hopefully that was helpful. I'm going to open up to any questions anyone has, or if you've got like stuff that you're doing or you're thinking about doing that could be helpful to the rest of us, that would be cool. Yes. So, yeah.
So you were talking about you start with conversations, and so are you intentional in developing the program from that, or has your projects that you've done come out of something you discuss as leaders in prayer? So, or is it both?
Like, are you talking about the social action? Yeah. So, it's at the Limitless Festival was the first time we did it, and that was more out of like what's possible for us to do, as opposed to this is what the young people wanted to do. But I think that's a good shout, actually, like listening to like what are they up for doing, like what forms of justice are they passionate about, and seeing if you can do do that as well. But I also think it's important to get young people engaged in areas of justice that they're not passionate about, because we need to teach them to be driven by the gospel and not by their desires and what's here. Cool. Oh.
It was just something you picked up on earlier that you mentioned when you were with your group of girls and how you had a conversation and you kind of scrapped what you had planned to carry on with that conversation. I think for us as leaders, sometimes we can get really carried away with like, I have this planned. And we're worried that if we don't have it, then we're missing out on something. And actually, yeah, there is a time when, yeah, we need to do that session that we planned, but also for us to be aware and going, okay, actually what's really important here? Is this conversation I'm having, is this more important than the thing that I've got? And it's okay, and we need to kind of be a bit more flexible rather than be rigid and stuck to it, which is something that I'm working on, but sometimes it's what's needed, so.
Yeah, nice. I've also found that young people really don't care about what I have to say. and they'll just forget. Like, you could there's times when I've walked in and I'm like, that message was so sick. And then they just have forgotten about it, literally as they walk out the door. Like, parents come up to me and they're like, I asked him what they learned in Sunday school and he can't remember. I was like, cool, I did a great job then. yeah. Oh, yeah, well, hopefully. Hopefully.
Just to add a comment in terms of like the teaching aspect of things, I found that one thing about being Christian is that we rely so much on testimony and like personal stories, and that's such a great part of our culture and what we do. But when it comes to certain social justice, especially when it comes to things like racism, sexism, ableism, when we're asking people to tell those stories in order for it to be engaging for everyone, that can often be very traumatic for the person because they're having to relive those moments. And especially since, you know, someone mentioned yesterday, you know, most of us aren't trained professionals when it comes to mental health. So what we're doing is we're like, tell me about when you experience racism, and they're sitting there and they're drugging it all up for us. And we're like, thank you for that. And we go home thinking, oh, I've learned so much. And they're actually like, I forgot about how bad that was, and that was really, really difficult, and there isn't that safe space for them. So as much as I'm a big advocate for, like, when it comes to talking about things that we haven't personally experienced, we need to make sure that we're pushing people forward who would experience those things, whether because they work closely with it or personal experience. We also need to be very protective of their humanity and of their imago Dei, and say, actually, is there a way that we can put together and really, like, rally this without expecting trauma and expecting them to upheave themselves in order for us to learn, because actually we're probably not doing a good job then, which can be really hard. Like, we're still learning. Even this morning we were talking about stuff and we were like, that was really traumatic. So we're all on a journey, and like, there's no right way to do it. And I think as long as we're really honest with our young people, like, I'm just learning, like, just as much as you are. I think actually they really appreciate that honesty. And that's what they'll remember. They'll remember that we tried, even if we got things wrong, as opposed to using them for the sake of the mission.
Could I just ask you something in connection with that? Say if you're doing a talk and a young person has experienced something that you're talking about, mm-hmm. and it triggers something, mm-hmm. how have you then gone about following that up?
Fine. I think it's all contextual. So for example, there was a time at camp, the last time we had camp, which is a very long time ago, where one of our teenage boys was you know, really dealing with some really hard father stuff that was very traumatic for him. And I was like, I can't really help you with this because it's very, very specific. And I was able to bring in somebody else who was able to kind of pull him aside and talk to him about all of the stuff, because a lot of the times, like, there is going to be trauma brought up, especially from people from a certain demographic, and that's normal. but I think we need to know our capabilities. As much as we want to be all things to all men, we can't be. So we just need to be aware of, like, okay, if we're going to have a conversation about racial justice, is there someone in the room who has the capabilities to be able to work through that trauma with them on the side while I do this, as opposed to, just wanting to have that conversation, but we're not having things in place where there is aftercare and there is, like, okay, if I don't know this, you know, there's this person, even if they're not from your church, but it's someone that you trust, who is you can connect them to. Because ultimately, as much as we want to be everything, like I've just said, there are so much resources out there, especially from other churches. And if we're saying, you know, we are limitless, like, we should be able to use people from other places and trust that ultimately, like, God would prevail. I hope that answered your question. Okay.
Guys, I appreciate this is such an important topic to talk about, and clearly we could talk about this for hours, but we actually have another session in like 5 minutes. We were meant to have a 15-minute break, but we've gone over, but it's okay. Jesus, no, it's not. Hey, listen, Jesus prompts something, and like we said, we've all either learned something new or we're aware as leaders how we need to manage our young people. So if you want to continue the conversation, feel free. But for the rest of us, a lot of people have had to leave because they're either like trying to get ready or need to go to the toilet. So again, thank you so much. Can we show our appreciation to Aria for this topic? Perfect. So if you want to continue the conversation, feel free. But everybody else, you've got 5 minutes until we have communion back in the main room in the Derbyshire Hall. Thank you.